Now laughing friends deride, tears I cannot hide, so I smile and say, when a lovely flame dies, smoke gets in your eyes.
June temperatures in the United States were the 14th warmest on record. A searing heat wave towards the end of June broke or tied over 170 records in cities across America. 56% of the continental United States is under drought conditions, with 1.3 million acres destroyed by June wildfires. A tinderbox. At month's end, Tropical Storm Debbie dumped record-breaking rainfall on Florida, while a severe storm cut a 600-mile swath from Illinois to Virginia, knocking out power for 3.4 million households. And that's just for June. The last 6 months were the warmest since record-keeping began in 1895, setting more than 40,000 hot temperature records in the United States, according to one press report. Now, an article published on Tuesday by the American Meteorological Society highlights new research that makes an explicit link between extreme weather events in 2011 and climate change. Meanwhile, back in the U.S. Congress, Senator Jim Inhofe took the podium on Wednesday to denounce global warming as a hoax. Again, our guest, Mark Hertzgaard, is an independent journalist and author of 6 books translated into 16 languages, including Hot, Living Through the Next 50 Years on Earth, just released in paperback, and On Bended Knee, The Press and the Reagan Presidency. He has covered politics, culture, global affairs, and the environment for leading media outlets the world over, including The New Yorker, Vanity Fair, Rolling Stone, Le Monde Diplomatique, and The Nation, where he is the environment correspondent. Mark Hertzgaard, welcome to Sounds of Dissent. It's great to have you.
Thanks for having me, Amy.
We're pleased to have you join us today. The June figures I just cited were from NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's climate overview for June. And NOAA just published its annual State of the Climate for 2012 that made a few headlines like 2 weeks ago. Those were published in the July issue of the Bulletin of the American Meteorological Society. Now, an article published in that same issue goes beyond that report to look at the causes of extreme weather. Did you see that article, and what do you think? How significant is it for this article to get written?
I did see that piece. I follow this issue fairly closely, and I was very interested in what they said about the Texas drought. They said in that article that, this is an article by a collection of British and American scientists, and they said that they wanted to look and see how much of the extreme weather is because of climate change and how much is, you know, the normal randomness of weather. Weather is a complicated system. And yet we now have enough historical data that you can attribute certain events to, or at least a portion of those events, to global warming. So, for example, one of the authors of that piece in the American Meteorological Society Journal is a Brit who did the really first important study linking extreme weather to climate change, and that was a study in the journal Nature that looked at the 2003 heat wave in Europe. And this was, you know, Europe's wake-up to climate change. Happened in 2003. They had a terrible heat wave there, killed 71,000 people. That's far more people than the U.S. war dead in the Vietnam War. 71,000 people in 6 weeks. And these scientists looked at it and compared it to historical averages, and they found that about half of the excessive temperatures in 2003 were related to global warming. Now they've updated that research, and they've looked last year at Texas, at the drought and the heat in Texas for 2011, where I was down reporting a few months ago, actually. Mm-hmm. And they found that, it was about made that the global warming and the greenhouse gas emissions that cause it made the 2011 drought in Texas about 20 times more likely than not. And this is a striking, we'll see what happens if it has any effect in Texas. As I say, I was down there doing some reporting last fall when Rick Perry was still a viable candidate for the Republican presidential nomination. And you had the quite bizarre confluence of, on the one hand, here's a Republican presidential candidate, Rick Perry, who's going around and saying, as James Inhofe just did this week again, that this is all a hoax. Meanwhile, his state is literally on fire. I went down to Houston, and there had been a fire in George Bush Park. This is a park inside the city limits of Houston, and it had been scorched. About 1,700 acres, that's about the size of New York Central Park, had been burned just the week that I was there. And, you know, you talk to the agricultural people there. They've lost $10 billion in the last year and a half in Texas.
How long has that drought been there?
Well, it depends how you count, but it began in 2010. 2011 was when it really began to dig deep. And let's bear in mind, too, it wasn't just the drought. They had the hottest temperatures on record in Texas, the worst drought in history in Texas. And so it's a devastating situation for the farmers there. And yet, because of this ideological belief on the part of many people on the right-hand side of the political spectrum in this country, they still have a hard time accepting that this is what's going on.
You know, I talk to people who are not climate skeptics. By no means would they describe themselves that way. And yet, there are people who think that the record, who wonder, they think that the record doesn't go back far enough to discount natural variability as the cause of global warming, as opposed to CO2 emissions by humans. Could you just, I know you can't argue with people who are emotionally convinced of the non-existence of global warming, almost like evolution, the same people who don't say that evolution doesn't exist. But for people who are just curious about how far back are these scientists able to look, and what are they looking at that enables them to be able to say for millennia that there's something really different happening here?
Sure. I think, let me just preface my answer by saying I think that it's certainly true. I know some of those same people. I talk to them in my reporting. And I think this is mainly a reflection of just how far behind the United States discussion on climate change is compared to the rest of the world, especially Europe. I mentioned that 2003 heat wave in Europe. That's when things really began to change in both public opinion in Europe and the elite opinion. And here it is. It's 9 years later, and finally this week, the United States government comes out and says, through that NOAA study, what the British government has been saying since 2004, that these extreme weather events are indeed evidence of climate change.
So, is this the first time they said that?
The U.S. government? Yeah, to my knowledge.
Okay, I didn't realize
that. Yeah, no, so it's an interesting historical moment, and yet we are almost 10 years behind the Europeans here. So I don't think that you'd find very many Europeans who are, you know, who would have that same misperception now, because their media has been covering this, and it's not just the left-wing or the progressive media in Europe. You know, if you look at the Financial Times newspaper, which is the business paper on the continent, they have been clear about the science of climate change for a decade. Likewise, if you look at the governments who are now running Europe, in Britain and Germany, for example, those are right-of-center political parties who head those governments. Not one of them has questioned the science of climate change for, you know, 15 years now. They may argue about what you do about it, who pays, how do we get these emissions down, but nobody questions the science anymore, because they would be laughed out of the discussion.
So it's that certain it goes back that far?
Oh, it goes back how far?
Well, again, I think the, you know, you read things like, for example, even the NOAA report, when it's talking about breaking records, it's talking about breaking records that since record keeping began in 1895. So people will say things like, well, you know, let's talk about tens of thousands of years ago. You know,
sure.
So how do you know that this isn't just a natural variation? I just want to get this out because, again,
sure.
I keep hearing this.
Yeah. Well, rest assured that, believe me, the scientists go back not just hundreds of years and thousands of years, but millions of years. Now, there's a difference when you're going back the hundreds of years to the modern temperature records. Yeah, those are relatively short. We've only got about 200 years of that. But in terms of going back into the prehistory, they look at ice core rings and tree rings, for that matter, physical evidence that goes back. And it is certainly true, as some of the deniers, climate deniers, will say that, oh, yeah, well, you know, we had hotter weather on this planet 20 million years ago. We certainly did. But guess what we didn't have? A human civilization. You know, it's all very well to say we've had hotter weather in the past, but it neglects the fact that our civilization is only 10,000 years old. And in these last 10,000 years, we've had the blessing of a remarkably stable climate. And that's what we're tampering with now by pushing these greenhouse gas emissions into the atmosphere.
But it was hotter for other reasons then besides greenhouse gas emissions, right?
Well, no, greenhouse gas, look, there's also natural greenhouse gas emissions, and there's a natural greenhouse gas effect. If there weren't, we couldn't be on this planet. It would be as cold as Mars. So we want there to be some greenhouse effect, or we wouldn't be able to be alive on this planet. The problem is now we're pushing the temperatures up beyond where it's safe for it to be.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to make one last point.
Sure,
just realize, you know, when you hear all this stuff about the scientists, this, that, and the other thing, every major scientific organization in the world, including our own National Academy of Sciences and its counterpart in Canada, in Britain, in Germany, in France, in Japan, in Russia, in China, everywhere, they've all looked at this question over and over and over again. They have examined all of the supposed disproofs that are put forward by these climate deniers. These are hundreds and thousands of scientists all together looking at this problem. And so when you hear these climate cranks saying that, oh, this is all just a hoax, You have to ask, well, are all of those scientists corrupt? Or are all of those scientists incompetent? Because that's what they're implying.
Here's where the role of the media comes in, right?
Well, the media should be making that much more clear that, right. You know, these are people who know what they're talking about. And but, you know, it's I think the media performance on this, you mentioned that I wrote a book about the media under Reagan.
Mm-hmm.
I think the media coverage of climate change in the United States, very different overseas, but in the United States, is shameful and has been shameful, and it will be seen as a great historical dark mark on the history of our profession.
You know, it's still true, even with this most recent release of this this study, this article, this issue, as you say, very significant. The two best articles, you know, the articles that I saw are both from The Guardian. There's two pieces on it. In the United States, I picked up, again, I'm just looking at the print media here, but I looked at The Washington Post. There's like a short article, but it's sort of framed as, you know, is climate change giving our weather a little nudge? And they say to make setting heat records more likely. And they say that's the opinion of one NOAA scientist. You know, this is the way they write. Then there's another one in the Christian Science Monitor where they even got the numbers wrong. Okay, this is the Christian Science Monitor, July 10th, right? A piece by Deborah Zabarenko, where at the end of the piece she says, well, first of all, the title is a question. Does climate change increase the odds of extreme weather events, right? And then, you know, it's about this new science of attributing individual events to climate change, but or saying whether they're more probable or not. But then she says that she gets the information wrong, where she says the first 6 months of 2012 were the hottest period on record, with more than 170 all-time heat records matched or broken. Well, the 170 figure is just for 2 weeks in June.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like this carelessness and this sort of, it's all very sort of like, I don't know, not greeted with the kind of seriousness you would expect of something that is potentially so cataclysmic. And I want you to say something about the carbon lobby, because we have about 8 minutes left, and their influence on the media, because I think that's what's going on here too, isn't it?
Sure. Well, the, where to start? It's a sad story, but the media here's the general point. The media in the United States covers climate change through a political lens, not through a scientific lens. And so the Washington Post and the New York Times and ABC News and all of them, they couch these stories from the standpoint of, well, on the one hand, some people believe this, and on the other hand, some people don't believe it, and they're going to honor that political difference in their coverage, rather than saying, the heck with the politics, let's look at what the science says and what the scientists say. And that is a very pernicious problem, and it relates, I think, exactly to what you're saying, the carbon lobby, and the fact that whenever any journalist or for that matter, politician or public figure or scientist like Jim Hansen, the NASA scientist who's been talking about this for years, whenever they do say things like this, they are attacked by the right wing for supposedly being politically biased. And then, you know, fair enough, but then the journalists crumble in front of that. And you just think, you know, where did you learn how to be a journalist? You're not supposed to crumble just because somebody criticizes your reporting, especially when they have such an obvious self-interest, as ExxonMobil and all of its front groups do, in discrediting your reporting.
Is it relevant that they're corporate media that we're talking about here, who are either owned by corporations or dependent on advertising from corporations? In other words, the political economy of the structure itself. Do you think that has an influence on?
Well, of course. Yeah, sure. But where the influence usually plays out in that regard is not so directly. It's that, the people at the top of those corporations are hired, or I should say at the top of those news groups are hired by their corporate overseers. And so they are going to hire the kinds of people who are going to, as I said, behave the way I've just described, which is to not be a journalist first and foremost, but rather to be a someone who cares about entertainment values and keeping the profit margins up and all of that. And that's not what journalism's about. I don't think that good journalism has to lose money, but you can't be afraid of telling the truth to people, and that's unfortunately what happens a lot. And that's again, something that really began in its modern form under the Reagan era, where the Republican and right-wing sort of hit machine would slam the media for supposedly being liberal, and the media has been cowering ever since, to its great shame. And this is just one example. It happens to be an example, climate change, that is arguably the most important, because it's going to make this planet uninhabitable. I have a 7-year-old daughter, and the way we're going, already, because we've let these climate cranks keep us from taking action in Washington, we're already locked into having the hottest weather in our civilization's history for the next 40 years on this planet. Mm. So it's going to be tough enough for my daughter and the rest of what I call Generation Hot to survive this. We've absolutely got to stop this nonsense of thinking that, let's talk about whether it's happening or not. We need to get way beyond that real fast and take the kinds of steps to build a green economy, which also creates jobs and makes us money, and say, the heck with this right-wing agenda and the corporate agenda of sticking with oil and gas and coal, when in fact we should be going in a completely different direction if we really care about the kind of future we leave for our kids.
Your book, even though it is incredibly sobering, your book Hot, Living Through the Next 50 Years on Earth, it's not ultimately a despairing book. Last question, where do you see the most potential for a collective and effective response?
I can't be despairing because I have a 7-year-old daughter, so despair just paralyzes you. We can't afford that now. And where I see the most hope is in grassroots political organization. I did a story 2 months ago in Mother Jones magazine about the biggest climate victory you never heard of, and it's the fact that we stopped new coal-fired power plants in this country over the last 5 years. And it wasn't done in Washington. It was done at the grassroots in the Midwest and in the South, in the supposedly red states, where an extraordinary coalition of young people, farmers, lawyers, environmentalists, public health professionals, nurses and doctors especially, got together and they said, we don't want coal, we don't need coal, let's go in a new direction. They blocked 166 plants, essentially shut down new coal in this country.
You're right.
That's an enormous achievement. And you haven't heard about it, even here on the in the progressive station. So we need to let people know that victories are possible. Victories are happening, and we need to build on those victories. And so that's where I see a real opportunity. And then really quickly, I'm also involved with some people who are starting up a new organization called Climate Parents. We want to mobilize and give voice to parents around this issue, because so far they've been the most underorganized constituency on climate change, which is bizarre considering the threat that it poses to what all of us hold most dear in our lives, which is our kids.
Where can people find out? Yeah, where can people learn about that?
Just come to, we're just putting up the website now, but it's called climateparents.org.
Great. Mark Hertzgaard, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
We've been speaking with Mark Hertzgaard, an independent journalist and author of Hot, Living Through the Next 50 Years on Earth. He's also the environment correspondent for The Nation magazine. You can find more information about Mark Hertzgaard at www.markhertzgaard.com. That's H-E-R-T-S-G-A-A-R-D. For Sounds of Dissent, I'm Amy Grunder.